To complete a sand mandala, an artist has to call upon something deeper than his artistic muse. To Tibetan Buddhists, it means calling to mind the highest of their spiritual teachings.
I have to consider it because everything in the mandala, it's mentioned in scripture.
For Tenzin Chakya, every day at the museum begins at 10 a.m. with prayer. Today, a small audience in an exhibit room is watching him meditate along with Geshe Lobsang Khunga in preparation for today's work. The two red-robed monks pick up their tools, long, narrow copper funnels that taper to a fine point. Each funnel, or chakpur, has ridges on the sides, and the artists lightly rub the chakpurs with small metal rods to let out minuscule streams of sand. From a lotus position, the monks bend forward so that their eyes are focused mere inches from the mandala, which is now just an inked-out pattern on a blue background. Little by little, sand from the funnels fills in the pattern. The complex colors, curves, and lines move outward from a center point. In the mystery of the sand mandala, the circle is key.
As far as the written texts go, the texts start out by describing a meditation where you make the world dissolve into nothingness.
Ter Ellingson studies Tibetan culture at the University of Washington, and he visited the monks as the mandala took shape.
And then out of that nothingness, there arises a lotus, and on the lotus, there is a syllable representing a sound that's the evocative sound out of which the deity can be visualized, and that is the chief deity at the center of the mandala. And out of that chief deity, either male or female, or sometimes a male-female couple, out of them emanate the surrounding deities of the mandala, and you can have sets of several hundred of those, or even 1,000 or more, emanating out of the center of the mandala.
While many mandalas require up to 20 artisans, the two monks inside the Krannert Museum are making a less laborious painting, roughly 4 feet by 4 feet. But there's an even more striking difference between most mandalas and this one. Most of these works made over the centuries no longer exist, and for a reason, says Tenzin Chakra.
Yeah, it's temporary. You know, it shows, you know, impermanence, because all the, you know, how to say, the world itself, all the phenomena things looks beautiful, it's really nice, but it doesn't long stay, you know. So it's, actually, when we create the mandala, then after we destroy it, dismantling, so it shows everything is impermanent.
The primary problem of existence for Buddhists is suffering that arises through impermanence. And in Buddhist thinking, all happiness is impermanent, all unhappiness is impermanent. And this entraps you in a circle of rebirths that goes on and on without end and without meaning, unless you find some way to transcend it. So a great deal of Buddhist art is aimed at creating an ephemeral kind of experience that is carried to sometimes is extremely beautiful forms of elaboration that involve the expenditure of hundreds or thousands of man hours of work.
Ellingson says at the end of that work, monks typically sweep the elaborate mandala into a pile of multicolored sand. They collect the pile into an urn and release the sand into a river to be carried out to the sea. U of I professor Isabel Wong says this painting, though, will live on.
Because the Dalai Lama wants to spread Tibetan art into the world, and we have permission to keep this as a souvenir for the university. So when the monk complete this, they're going to put some gluing material on the mandala so we will keep somewhere in the university, probably international programs.
Then we put more and more here.
The Tibetan monks are in Champagne as part of a grant program. Students from several disciplines are exploring the art of the sacred, including similar sand painting in the Indian and Navajo cultures. Senior psychology major Nicole Heidbreder is among those learning by watching Tenzin Chakra at work.
I think any art form is a form of meditation. If you really allow it to express something within you, then that's just like meditating. It's experiencing the insides of you.
The students may not have mastered sand painting to the point where it becomes a meditative exercise, but they sit in a circle and practice their own rudimentary lines with sand. Heidbreder is amazed that some lines done by the most accomplished mandala artists can be as narrow as one grain of sand.
At first, it was a bit awkward, but then after a while, I think our whole class started to enjoy that part of it. That when we were doing the Indian sand paintings, we as a class would make rather detailed, large ones for 3 hours every class. And at the end of the class, you brush it away, and you leave. It's nice. It's therapeutic. And like I said, I think it's enjoyable for us to learn, for us to do, because it's like the opposite of Western thing. You know, here you do something to get something in return, or to keep it forever.
Nor will the monks be here forever. They return to their monastery in southern India after this weekend, leaving behind an example of their beautiful, yet temporary, spiritual work. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.